WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The movement that started the world language known as Esperanto is celebrating its centennial this year. Our language commentator, Jeffrey Nunberg, has these thoughts on its efforts to have us all learn a common tongue.
There are around 3,000 languages spoken in the world today, and you'd think the last thing we need is more of them. But over the years, various people have proposed that the solution to this Tower of Babel is to invent a new world language that everybody could adopt as a second tongue. The heyday of this world language movement was in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, when Europe was being torn apart by nationalism, and it seemed as if a world language might provide the key to world peace. During these years, there was a vogue for Volapük, invented in 1880 by a German priest, and for Ido, an interlingua, both devised by mathematicians. Each of these languages was cooked up according to more or less the same recipe. Take a potpourri of vocabulary from various European languages, add a few simple and regular rules of grammar, and voila, you have a ready-made world language. It has none of the irregularities that make natural languages so difficult to learn, or the cultural biases that make natural languages inappropriate for universal use. But the only world language that's still alive and kicking is Esperanto, which was introduced in 1887 by a Russian physician named Ludovik Zamenhof. The worldwide Esperanto movement today claims 8 million members who gather in clubs from Shanghai to Rio to Rotterdam. When they travel, they wear little green lapel pins that enable them to identify one another, sort of like a linguistic Elks Club. This summer, more than 5,000 of them met in Warsaw to celebrate their centennial. Now, I don't want to be too hard on a movement whose object is world peace through communication, particularly when its members are willing to put a lot of effort into realizing this dream. No matter how simple the grammar of Esperanto is, it takes a certain commitment to learn the language. It's not like going out some Sunday afternoon to join hands across Central Park. Still, the Esperanto movement is somewhere between a hobby and a cult, and likely to remain that way. In the first place, we don't really need a made-up world language, particularly one with no real literature or cultural life of its own. We have English, which is the universal language of choice for a Frenchman doing business in Arabia, for a Soviet scientist visiting Japan, or for Italian teenage boys who want to flirt with Danish tourists. The Esperantists say that the problem with English is that it incorporates the biases of Anglo-Saxon culture. To a certain extent, that's right. Every natural language is a kind of lens that shapes and colors the way its speakers see the world. But even an artificial language will have its biases if it's going to work at all. Trying to design a generic culture-free language is like trying to design a generic face, a face that's neither white, black, nor Asian, neither male nor female, neither young nor old. And Esperanto is not so neutral as its speakers claim. For one thing, its European vocabulary inevitably reflects the worldview of European civilization. Then, too, the language takes on a local cast according to who's speaking it. Esperanto has a word that means charm, for example, but as you might guess, the French and Japanese Esperantists don't use it in the same way. If by some miracle an artificial language like Esperanto were ever adopted worldwide, you'd soon find it breaking down into mutually incomprehensible local varieties. I guess what really bothers me about the Esperanto movement is its presumption. The more you look at natural languages, the more you're amazed by their subtlety and complexity. To imagine that you could consciously design such a thing takes a certain, well, I guess it takes a certain chutzpah. I wonder how you say that in the universal language. As Rousseau wrote, if God had not taught men to speak, they would never have learned by themselves.
Jeffrey Nunberg is a linguist associated with the Center for the Study of Language and Information at Stanford University.